Xavi. He's done it. Four. Balotelli. Aguero. Cahill. Cahill. Tim Cahill has done it again. What a goal by Tim Cahill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Premier League Nightclub podcast. My name is Damon, and with me, I have Woody. Woody, we're back for episode 4 of the Nightclub mini-series. How are you?
Good, man. I'm very good. I'm really excited for this one because we picked the topic last week, and it's a good topic, isn't it, Damon? I'm really excited because this brings back memes, and I think that's exactly what we're trying to do during this isolation period is bring back as many memories as we can, and I'm so excited to get stuck into this one.
Mate, I've noticed that, like, through my research, I'm learning just as much as reminiscing because a lot of these teams that I looked at in the research, we were probably like barely born, or if we were, we were only 5 or 6 years old. So you sort of like get a better understanding on what it was like around the, you know, late 90s, early 2000s and so on. So yeah, I'm learning just as much as reminiscing during all this.
Yeah, I know we've definitely got one team that is probably right around the time that we were born, long before that we got into the Premier League. But for the rest of the teams, really, they were sort of in our era when we sort of started watching, when we sort of started really supporting. And just to see the league, how it's changed, especially over the last decade, is really interesting. And I think it just bodes well to see where it's going to change for the next 10 years as well.
We're definitely going to have like special seasons like we did with Leicester. And obviously they're not a team we're going to be talking about today because they certainly overachieved rather than underachieved, but certainly some similar team or some teams in that similar time frame. But Woody, there are some teams that had their own seasons around that 2015-2016 era, isn't there, Woody? So I think as a part of this intro, it's probably worth mentioning the special time we had during our Sunday league and how we certainly didn't make the most of the opportunity.
Nah, for sure. So we played straight out of school. We graduated 2015, end of 2015. And 2016, we joined our school's team for old students, which is the Old Trinigumarian Soccer Club, the OTG SC. And the maiden season, we were all pretty fit coming straight out of school because we've all played school sports.
But also pretty raw. Pretty raw.
Very raw as well. And I think we've been playing futsal together as a team, everyone that joined the club for about 2 years. And so we played well together as a team, but we didn't know how we were going to gel with the other characters or other people that we were going to sort of play in this team. And it was a funny season, Damon. We came third, but we should have probably won the league.
I must say that the phrase characters is a good way to describe the team. A lot of characters. Yeah, you're right, Woody. We should have probably won the league. I think on the final day of the season, we sat second. And it was really tight between the top three, but we were playing top of the table. So we needed to beat them to win the league. And we were 2-0 down at half time. And I think we came back, hit up 2-2. But then when we were going, we decided to go for it late and try to win the league rather than finish top two. Because that a draw was enough to keep us second, I think. And and we conceded out the back door. And that dropped us down to third. And that team, obviously, that we lost to ended up winning the league. So there's obviously lots and lots of things that happened during the year, such as some incredible goalkeeping by a certain someone. And Woody, you've written here in the notes that you bagged 18 goals. Yesterday, you told me it was 21, but I would be surprised if it's more than 10. I don't know. What planet are you on, mate? You did not score 18 goals in this season.
Mate, do you know what? It was either 17 or 18. I've gone for 18. I actually put in 21 before, but I know I definitely didn't score 21, but I can tell you it was definitely around 17 or 18 because I think I bagged four braces for the season, and the only time I scored more than two goals was when I scored five goals, and that was, I'm pretty sure, against...
So you were stat padding, mate.
No, I was a gun. I was leading the line. I was playing left wing, right wing. Mate, I was a freak. I was freak in nature. And it was funny because straight out of school, I was a bit podgy as well. So you just see this little meatball running down the wings. And I'd played rugby for 6 years. So it was, mate, the amount of yellow cards I think I got for the season, I should have been suspended, but because I think I was registered under someone else's name. So
yeah, I was about to say paperwork wasn't really a thing.
It was not a thing at all. I paid my club rego, I think, like 3/4 of the way through the season. So we sort of got conned into paying overs for rego as you usually do in Sunday league. But yeah, Damo, the characters we had in the team were pretty funny. Pretty funny.
Right, there was some absolute, you know, blokes who thought they did, instead, what were we, State League 5 or something? A few blokes in that team who thought they should have been Premier League.
I've looked it up and we were actually Metropolitan League 7, Northwest. So, yeah, that's...
So probably about a good 10 divisions lower than I thought.
But yes. We were so crap. We were so crap. But yeah, Damo, you got conned into playing keeper that season.
Yeah, I did. And I remember, I think we might have mentioned this on a previous mini, but we didn't have a keeper come round one. And I had a little bit of experience. So I was sort of got conned into it by you blokes, made a few unbelievable saves. And then by the end of the season, I was wanted in the Rezzy's team in the first team, but, you know, stuck loyal to the boys as I do. And yeah, could have been an unbelievable year, but unfortunately we slumped to third and we never went back. Did we?
No, we never.
Don't even think we went to presentation night.
we definitely did not go to presentation night. But Damo, let's quickly, just for a couple of minutes, let's touch on some of the characters we had, because we still talk about them to this day when we kick around the ball. And the one I want to start with is Big Nico at centre-back. The big. So
we're dropping real names in this pod.
Big Nico at centre back. He was partnered with one of our mates, and to say he had a foul mouth is a bit of an understatement. I reckon the bloke was on the weekly steroid cycle and finished every game with a protein shake. So
someone needed to tell that guy the science behind protein and how it works, because he clearly hadn't mastered the concept just yet. But, I mean, he was definitely also the type of guy you did not tell the science to. You just let him do his thing. And I think once he scored an own goal, Woody, or at least made a massive error that led to a goal, and it was anything but his fault. And you weren't going to question him about it. He was a scary character. And look, you know, I won't say anything more, but at the same time, you probably wouldn't want to go out for a beer with him.
No.
Is that sort of a good way to put it?
Oh, for sure. And I think it's probably fair to say that all his brains are in his biceps. So we'll move on, David. Dean, Big Dean, I'm pretty sure he did his ACL against the Castlemaine Goldfields on an away day. That was funny. He was like 45 years old, plugging up and down.
Yeah, I was about to say, the way he spoke, it was like he'd done his ACL 30 years ago. That man had some stories behind him, for sure. Yeah,
it was so funny, though. It was such a traditional Sunday league thing where your 45-year-old right back does his ACL trugging up the wing. Oh, it's just hilarious. But then let's all get started on a few of the imports that we had as well. We had someone's cousin from Greece who was staying for the year. He was studying, and I'm pretty sure he was a Greek radio host or something. It was Costa, and it wasn't until I was listening to the radio that I actually realized he was on the radio. He was so shit. We just had to stick him up top every time he came on, we had to change to a 4-4-2 because he was just too slow and too fat to play a single striker. So when he came on, it was like we had 10 on the field. It was just, it was next level. And you just couldn't, he couldn't finish a plate of food if he wanted to. Honestly, finishing ability was horrible. He played with two left feet. It was nuts.
Yeah, well, he wasn't alone though. There were a few blokes. I remember there was a guy on our team who I always thought looked a little bit like Riyad Mahrez, but football ability wise, he couldn't be further from it. He just couldn't run. Oh, I don't know if you remember his name, Woody, but you remember him in general. But yeah, we had a few characters.
It was it was Nakas, mate. Nakas.
Oh yeah. Oh jeez. Alrighty, Woody. We've rambled on for about 10 minutes about our own team, and so I think it is now time to talk about Premier League football, and that's why we do this show. the first team I want to open up with is a team that obviously we were going to talk about in this pod, so we might as well put a line through them straight away, and that's Southampton.
Yep.
About 2014 to 2016, and this team, I'm going to whip out some names here for you, Woodrow.
Please.
Two obvious ones, Mane and Van Dijk. But then we got Schneiderlin, Wanyama, Tadic, Pele, Shane Long, Font, Stephen Davis. And now you might be thinking, you're even missing Luke Shaw, Lallana, Gareth Bale. Those guys were even before this era. So Southampton, for a good 5 years, really smashed it in terms of recruitment. But look, I know they finished sixth and seventh in the 2014-15 and 15-16 seasons. But for mine, I just think, considering how some of these players have gone after, obviously Tadic tearing it up at Ajax, obviously Mane and Van Dijk doing wonders at Liverpool, you'd have to wonder whether this team actually underachieved, given that they never really did any damage in Europe, despite qualifying twice.
Yeah, for sure. And I think the 15-16 season was probably their missed opportunity, really. Because if you're looking at this season as a whole, from March onwards, they only lost one game. And that was to the eventual champions in Leicester, the mighty fairy tale. But I guess if you take the 6 weeks away between late November to the end of the calendar year in 2015, the Saints would have finished second. So if you're looking at their season, it was really two sides of the year because their 2015 was completely different to how they started it and finished their 2016. So, you know, if they had the run they had at the end of the season, probably at the start, it would have been a different story for them. And of course, they finished sixth that season, so they were not that far off as well. And that was in a year where, you know, the top four were probably as vulnerable as they are now.
Yeah, we've spoken about it so much this season, Woody, about how the top four have been vulnerable. But a lot of people forget this 2015-16 season. Obviously, Leicester won the league and no one forgets about that. But I'm more talking, I think, Liverpool and Chelsea finished lower than Southampton that year. I mean, that's just unheard of.
Yeah.
And probably won't happen for a long time. And they were only a couple of points off Man United, Man City in fourth and fifth. So, you know, this team, with a little bit more consistency, could have done a lot more damage. And I look at their League Cup, their FA Cup, and European runs. They really didn't do much with them. And when you have a team like Southampton did, you almost need to, if you need to maximize it and you need to cash in and get in your, get your silverware now. And they weren't able to do it. A fourth round exit and a third round exit in consecutive years to Crystal Palace in the FA Cup. Consecutive fifth round exits in the League Cup. One to Sheffield United, who were in the third division at the time, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think they were also League One.
Yeah. And they were hammered by Liverpool in the League Cup in 15-16. And of course, they didn't even get through qualifying in the Europa League in 15-16. So their cup runs weren't fantastic. And you'd have to say that much weaker teams have won cup competitions.
Oh, for sure.
I think of Wigan back in 2012-13. They got relegated
and won
the FA Cup.
What a story that was.
So, yeah, you just have to wonder that despite cashing in, obviously, $75 million for Van Dijk, I look at a guy like Mane, $34 million. Southampton could have got another $20 million out of him if they kept him one more season. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
They haven't done badly, and this isn't exactly a criticism of Southampton, but you just have to wonder, especially where they are now, they probably will survive with the form of Danny Ings, but you just have to wonder what could have been for this Southampton team.
Oh, yeah, and then, like, the players they had, you look at the likes of Graziano Pelle and Tadic and Wanyama, not the guys that you know, the Mane and Van Dijk sort of stratospheres, but they were playing some seriously good football. And obviously, Wanyama went to Tottenham, Tadic went overseas, and Pele had a season as well. He led the line. Like, they missed opportunities. They missed some serious opportunities because, you know, they had a really solid team. And unfortunately, this Southampton team was probably, I guess, raped and pillaged for the best part of probably 3 or 4 years post this as well. But they really became the gold mine of the EPL. And I guess almost top of Europe as well with the players they had going overseas and going to bigger clubs. But yeah, just lost opportunity, Damo.
For sure. All right, Woody, I want to move on to the next one. And it's a team that I found incredibly interesting looking at. And that was the Chelsea team just before the takeover by Abramovich from about 2000, we'll say, to 2004. I know Abramovich came along in 2003, but I feel like it's important to add that 2004 year in it. This is Claudio Ranieri's reign at Chelsea. And Would he, again, we refer it back to that Leicester title, and we know what Ranieri was able to do some 15 years later around about, but you'd have to say his time at Chelsea was another what could have been.
Yeah, and it's interesting for us looking back because we're sort of digging out research because we weren't really around or supporting to see this, but when you do have a look at it in depth, you just seriously wonder, how the hell did Ranieri go four seasons without a trophy? You know, he lost the FA Cup in 2002 to Arsenal and then lost to Monaco in the semis of the Champions League in 2004. But the players he had playing, you know, under him, the likes of Makélélé, Petit, Galas, you know, Lampard, Juan Sebastian Veron as well. Mate, he's some of the best players in Europe at the time as well. So you sort of really have to question, how did they not go further, or how did they not win silverware during this time? Because, you know, Chelsea had such success, you know, in the late 2000s that, you know, their team wasn't that unchanged from this 2000-2004 spell. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you'd have to say that once Jose came along at the end of the 2004 season, you look at their signings, they picked up Petr Cech, Iron Robin and Didier Drogba. And obviously we know what those three went on to do. But there's a lot of talk that said Ranieri had every intention of signing Iron Robin and Didier Drogba. Not so much about Petr Cech, but those two that I mentioned were definitely locks that Ranieri wanted. So they clearly rated Ranieri's vision. If you look at their league finishes, they finished 6th, 6th, 4th and 2nd. And obviously there's clear progress under Ranieri. And that season they finished second was the year Arsenal went unbeaten. So, you know, sometimes it's just your timing is unlucky. But you also got to give credit to Ranieri. Brought the likes of Lampard, as you said, Woody, from West Ham. Noticed John Terry in the reserve, brought him up. And, you know, again, we know the career he had. So this 2000 to 2004 era, as much as they didn't win a trophy, which I'm sure would probably still haunt some of these players, I think of Zola.
Mm-hmm.
He left before Chelsea won the league, and he was there during this whole period as well. So he's probably one that feels hard done by. But you'd also have to say this era set the foundation for a purchase of Chelsea Football Club. And, of course, Jose Mourinho coming and winning two leagues, an FA Cup and a League Cup in his first spell there, I should say.
Yeah, and you know, that's the thing. Like, unfortunately, you look at these teams and they fall victim to some of the greatest seasons of all time, which almost discredits their seasons because obviously no one remembers second. But then if you look at this Chelsea 2004 team when they did come second, they are victim to probably one of, if not the best Premier League team of all time. So that, you know, that I think that goes worth noting that they just fall victim to time and place, really.
For sure.
Yeah, and I think that almost goes with probably the next team that we're going to move on to, which is the Tottenham 2009 to 2012 team. And that's Harry Redknapp's Spurs. You know, they secured Champions League for the first time in their history, finishing fourth in 2009. But even then, this 2009, probably the 2008 to 2013 years, which was right where this prime Tottenham was, the top four were probably their most dominant ever. And you look at probably the rise of Manchester City, the continuing success of United, and even the success of Chelsea as well. These are the teams, they dominated this era for about you know, 8 to 10 years. When you see the prime Tottenham teams come through, they always fall victim to a dominating top four. And that's exactly...
You have to say even Liverpool were pretty strong during that time as well.
Yeah, exactly. And that's a team that we almost left out as well because, it, you know, it's just, you know, unfortunately, they just fall victim to the big four. But especially if you look at this Tottenham team, if we start the 09 season, they had, you know, you look at the prime Tom Huddleston, young Luka Modric, Aaron Lennon, Wilson Palacios. And that's not to even mention their attacking options, which was Gareth Bale. Peter Crouch had just come in. Pavlyuchenko, Jermaine Defoe
Crouchy.
As well. Crouch. I had to choose this team because of Peter Crouch. He just rambles too long about it on the that Peter Crouch podcast. You just can't.
Mate, Harry Redknapp loves Peter Crouch more than his own son. I'm telling you.
Well,
loves Crouchy.
I'm pretty sure I just finished the episode where they said Harry Redknapp would do the eulogy at Crouchy's funeral, which I think would just be so funny. It'd be so funny. But yeah, looking back at this Tottenham team, in 2010-11, finished fifth to make Europa League, made it through the Champions League quarters, and that was an absolutely famous season when they downed the both of the Milan teams as well, and I'm pretty sure they fell victim to, it was Real Madrid, and that was Ronaldo, when Ronaldo had his 50-goal season. So, you know, they were really strong, this Tottenham team, and they got very successful, but you just can't help but think, they were so close for so long. What could have taken them into that top four, I guess, stratosphere? And that's, you know, the season that they really could have had, and that in this period of time that probably should have seen them win more silverware.
Yeah, I think you make your own luck sometimes, but then on the other hand, you do really get unlucky. Of course, their fourth place finish in the 11-12 season was a great success until Chelsea the following week won the Champions League against all odds against Bayern Munich. So, you know, these little moments probably can hurt teams, not just in the moment, but after the fact. You know, you think of guys like Modric, Bale, of course, left a few seasons later. These sort of guys, you know, Raphael van der Vaart was finishing up, coming towards the latter end of his career. These guys, they're almost inclined to stick around a little bit more if they see something coming in the future. But little things like that makes it less interesting for players to stick around. And let's look at Liverpool, for example. Steven Gerrard retired somewhat against his own will, but it was when Klopp was rebuilding Liverpool. If, let's just say, Gerrard was 2 years younger, he might have played an extra 4 years because of what Liverpool were becoming. Do you get what I'm saying?
Yeah,
Woody?
Yeah,
like, completely. You can't really become a part of a rebuild if you're at the point where you need results now.
Yeah, for sure. And that's exactly where that Tottenham team were, really, because you know, if you look at what their rebuild was at the start of the 2009 under Harry Redknapp, when he brought in all these guys, you know, if you look at towards the end of his reign, you look at the likes of, you know, was it Adebayor, you know, came in, and I'm pretty sure he was a top scorer for Tottenham in Harry Redknapp's last season at Tottenham. But you know that, you know, Tottenham played that they were third for so long. And then just only a couple points behind the Manchester clubs. And, you know, there was much speculation as to whether they could mount a title challenge. But, you know, come late Feb, really, like, seasons collapse. And we've seen so many historic teams, you know, where their seasons collapse in late Feb or early March. And I think that's such a defining period. And if you can't get through that, then you're probably not worthy of being a good team, really, if you're going to collapse so late. Because obviously the season is a marathon, not a sprint. So I think, yeah, you just see so many teams fall victim to just issues post the new year. So yeah, it just really defines whether teams are going to reach greatness or not.
Speaking of reaching greatness or not reaching greatness, I should say, Woody, we have got one more that we want to talk about, and one that you really wanted to talk about, because it was a team that probably gets left behind in terms of these sort of discussions, and it's the Aston Villa team of 2008 to about 2010. One of the more memorable teams that gets forgotten about, if that makes any sort of sense. Of course, a young lad by the name of Ashley Young won the PFA Young Player of the Year in the 08-09 season, and Milner, who won it in 09 and 10. These two guys really ran the show for Aston Villa, but you'd have to say 08-09 was the real missed opportunity from a Villa perspective.
Oh, mate, it was the golden year for Aston Villa, and I'm pretty sure it's regarded by fans as probably being some of the best years in the club's modern history. And anyway, in the middle of Feb, you know, Aston Villa were third, and that's something saying to have this Aston Villa team that were third. You know, that was 7 points clear of Arsenal in fifth, and you know, if they had the consistency, they would have made it through to Champions League. But they went on a pretty, you know, famous run where they didn't get a win for, I guess, months. And they gave up their Champions League spot, and it took the Gunners less than a month to make up the ground to reach fourth. I think that will remain as probably the biggest year of disappointment for Villa fans. And when you ride the roller coaster of the Premier League, you get these sort of stories. And that was exactly the case for this Villa team. They had so much promise, and if they just had the consistency, they would have been in the Champions League, and who knows what that would have done for the fortune of the club. That probably would have reshaped the top six for a few years to come as well. And obviously Villa are probably going to get relegated this season. They're looking extremely likely. You know, it's just the fortune of the Premier League, really. And Damon, not to mention, I know you mentioned Ashley Young and James Milner as well, but a young Gabby Agbonlahor as well.
Yeah, I was about to say, yeah. A few absolute weapons in this lineup. Yeah, Emil Heskey. Was he there?
Yes, John Carew as well, the big, I'm pretty sure he was Norwegian back in the day. He was huge as well. And then Martin Lawson, in defense. And I think a lot of people go without recognizing the impact that he had on the Villa club. He won the Champions League with AC Milan in 2003 and the Serie A in 2004. And he had the captain armband for that 2009-10 season. And also, I'm pretty sure, the 2008-09 season as well. And he was a monster in defense. Was right up there in the Premier League team of the season voting as well. Yeah, this Villa team, far out. You just look at the names.
They got it right. They really did get it right around this time.
Yeah, they did.
Woody, I was just about to say that they got real close to some silverware. Semis in the FA Cup, runners-up in the League Cup, and they made the Europa League 3 times in a row. So they really, you know, it's one of those things where we almost forget, especially as we were probably young fans at the time, about 10 or 12 years old, you forget about how consistent Aston Villa and the Southamptons were.
Mm.
And when we look at it now, Aston Villa, they're just, as you said, Woody, a shadow of the team they were back then. And this isn't even their prime time in their history. But that late 2000s era is something that, again, I would say, although successful, they would still be having nightmares about the fact that they probably didn't achieve what they thought at some points during those seasons they could.
Yeah, completely. And I literally could not agree with you more, because I think of Martin O'Neill, and he's probably one of the most underrated managers in our Premier League era as well. I think the things that he did with some of these players, and Gabby Agbonlahor was by no means a world-class player. He was not...
Whoa.
Hold up.
Mate, you're talking smack about
no,
the speedster himself.
No, I'm just saying, if we're being realistic, Agbonlahor, cult favourite, Villa hero, but realistically, he was not a top four striker, right? But the things that Martin O'Neill was doing was making him, you know, play the best of his abilities and really push Villa up the table. Even you know, what he did with their captain, Martin Lawson, you know, Lawson came in from Milan, and he was a hack for 3 years. He played 30 games in 3 years. 30 games. And then to give him the armband as well, you know, clearly Larson's not a bad player. He won the Champions League with AC. So to give him the armband as well, fun fact, Damo, what he actually did with this guy that turned him into one of the best central defenders in the league was he said to him, "All right, you got the armband, but you know what? What happens from Monday to Friday in terms of training, you figure it out yourself. If you want to train with the first team, you can. But if you don't want to, go do your own thing. As long as you're fit for Saturday, you have free reign completely over how you train." Which I thought, which is something you probably don't really hear about these days. But
oh, no way.
Yeah, and just to hear that, I think, you know, Martin O'Neill did wonders with this Aston Villa team, but far out, what could have been?
All right, Woody, I reckon that wraps up the teams that could have been episode. Another successful mini, I would have thought. Pose the question, though. What do we talk about for the next ep? You got any ideas?
That is a good question. I did have an idea during the week, but I completely forgot about it. So have you got any that come to mind?
Well, one I sort of thought could work: iconic title races or title races in general. So I'm talking like ones that went down to the nail. Talk about key moments in the season. How does that sound?
Yeah, sounds good. All I can remember is City clinching the closing day title over United,
Something tells me that might get a mention in next week's episode. But yeah, I reckon that could be a good one. And we could make it just races in general. So top four races, relegation battles, just we'll talk about the lot.
Yes, I would love to chuck in some relegation battles as well.
Too easy. All right, well, we'll lock that in for next week. Woody, I'm out of here. If they want to hit up the socials, where can they find us?
You can find us on Insta at Premier League Nightclub. And Damo, where can you find us on the Twitter?
At PL Nightclub, or just search us on the Facebook, you'll find us. And also, Woody, we've got episode 39 coming out within the next week, so keep an eye out for that. It will be around. And there's another, we'll say, gift for the listeners. Is that a good way to put it, Woodrow?
I think we can definitely say that we've got another Aussies Uncovered coming on.
Too easy. Hope everyone had a nice Easter. I'm out of here. See ya.
See you guys. Cheers for booking at the Premier League nightclub.